This is I Choose Life News and Views, sponsored by Indiana Right to Life and Allen County Right to Life, committed to defending innocent human life for all people of all ages. Your hosts are Kathy Humbarger, Abigail Eschelbach, and Scott Kump.
Welcome to I Choose Life News and Views. I'm Kathy Humbarger.
I'm Abigail Eschelbach.
And I'm Scott Kump. I Choose Life News and Views is a joint project of Allen County Right to Life, Indiana Right to Life, and Bot Radio Network in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
We have returning guest and political commentator Peter Heck joining us for this segment of the program. Peter is a nationally published columnist and regional talk show host who's been heard on over 200 radio stations throughout America, and he is our secret weapon in the public school system, having taught in the public school system in the Kokomo area since 2001, I believe, Peter. Is that right?
That's right. September 11th was my first year teaching, and they don't prepare you for something like that
in
college.
That is certainly true, and I know that you take every opportunity to speak truth into those young minds, and I know that you have no idea how many lives you've influenced with the truth, especially since you teach courses in American government and American history, as I'm sure many of those students would not have been taught under the tutelage of some of the more left-leaning instructors. How many students do you think you've impacted over the years?
Oh, man, it's tough to say. You know, the truth is that I feel like it's a new congregation of students that come through every year. And some of the best parts of being a teacher, and those that are listening that have been involved in education will certainly speak to this, that it's oftentimes the ones that you have no idea that something that you even said offhand or in a private, personal, quick conversation in the hallway makes a lasting difference. And that's true for everybody in every profession. You just don't know at what moment what you say or the way that you act, the way that you treat somebody can make a lasting impact. And to the degree that I've been able to do that, I feel blessed and hope to be able to continue doing that for a long time, as long as they'll let me.
Well, I know the public school teachers come under attack, and that's really unfair in many instances. We need people who are willing to stand in those dark places and speak the truth, not only in the arena of public education, but in many other professions as well. So I encourage all those who are listening that feel like they're the Lone Ranger, and we really need Christians speaking the truth in all those professions.
Absolutely. And you look at the Council of Scripture is the best place to turn. You know, God's people aren't always promised to sit in the lap of luxury or in a palace somewhere, and God positions people like chess pieces in places that he needs them to proclaim the truth. And we're not responsible for anything beyond our faithfulness to the gospel message. And so we can do that. I'm always inspired by Paul, who, a man's in chains. If anybody could possibly complain about their circumstances, it would be somebody that's chained to a Roman guard. But you know, Paul doesn't say, man, I'm chained to him. He says, no, he's chained to me, and he's going to get an earful.
Right.
And that guy ends up converting to the Christian faith.
Indeed.
So it's a prime example of the way God can use us no matter the circumstance.
Indeed. And I just want to let everyone know that you're going to be in Northeast Indiana speaking at a Harvest Celebration for Life on August 29th. I would encourage anyone in the Northeast Indiana area to go to ichooselife.org and register for this event. It's going to be on the beautiful Joseph Dequey Farm. The grounds are lovely. Peter, you're going to be the keynote and deliver the address that evening to challenge us to be about speaking truth for the unborn and their mothers. And we're going to be joined by many friends that evening. The honorary host is your friend, Pat and Kim Miller. Anytime you get Pat Miller and Peter Heck together, you never know what's going to happen. Congressman Marlin and Christy Stutzman are going to be joining us, along with Lieutenant Governor Eric Holcomb, Elkhart County Prosecutor Curtis Hill, many other elected officials and friends. It's going to be a good evening. We're going to try to keep the program short and have plenty of time for folks to enjoy the grounds and the good food and have an opportunity to interact informally with friends and elected officials. So please go to ichooselife.org and register for that event. Peter, we're looking forward to it. And this is a very interesting election cycle. back when I started voting, the legal age was still 21, so I've been voting for many years, but I must admit that this is the first election cycle that I've seen with so much confusion and turmoil. Yeah. Being a single issue voter, Peter, what would you say to somebody like me whose passion is life? I know that we want to be careful about being partisan. The lines are very clear, though. Let's start at the federal level. What kind of observations do you have as we look at a very upside down race at the federal level? There's so much at stake. Give us some words of wisdom.
Well, I guess I have to start off by saying I'm only going to the Harvest Party because of the food. So I just want everyone to, it has nothing to do with Pat Miller. It has everything to do with the food. No, I am looking forward to that and appreciate the invitation. And it's going to be a great evening. And I want it to be an encouraging evening for folks as well, because there is so much positive to talk about relative to life. And I think that's a good transition into your question, because, and you've been voting a little longer than I have, but I can certainly say that I've never encountered an election where I've seen people of convicted Christian background and having those beliefs, conservative politics, more moderate politics, but who hold firm on the issue of life, who have felt so conflicted about what to do when they look at the presidential election, you know, and the other races that are going on at the federal level. They feel as though both parties have betrayed them, or they feel as though this is a cut and dry issue. One party stands for life. And certainly when you look at the platform, there's no comparison between the two political parties. Does that mean that everybody that belongs to the Republican Party is worthy of the vote? Again, I believe that every individual has to determine the qualifications that they hold for various candidates. What I would encourage folks to do, of course, is to recognize all that is at stake in this election. And for those that advocate a certain direction in the presidential race, many times the argument is made Supreme Court appointments. There's so much at stake with the Supreme Court, and they rule on so many important issues, and certainly life issues are going to be at the forefront. I know that the court thought that they ended that in 1973, and the truth is they just started the battle in 1973, and this is going to, we're going to continue fighting for the Declaration of Independence until we finally start living up to it. That's not going to go away. Supreme Court plays an important role in that, and I would encourage folks to press not just at the presidential level on that, but they have to realize that those Supreme Court appointments are going to be filibustered if they stand for life, unless there are enough senators who are willing to stand up and stop that. So it's one thing to talk about the appointment themselves, but you have to consider also the importance of down ballot elections. Here in the state of Indiana is a prime example of one that you could potentially see another vote go to sustain a filibuster for a solid conservative justice that could be appointed, depending on how the presidential election goes. Or let's flip it. If the presidential election goes the other way, will we have a yes vote, a stamp of approval on whatever judicial appointment is made there? So I just encourage folks to recognize that the battle for life at the federal level is not confined to simply the presidential race. And I know so often that seems to get our focus, but there's so many other important elections at stake there.
And as we talk about the Indiana races, boy, we've certainly had the deck shuffled as we consider the candidates at the top of the ticket, the governor's race and also the Senate race. Things are not as they began, both with the governor's race and also the Senate races. There's been a lot of changes going on there. So we need to do our homework for certain.
Absolutely. That goes along with what we were saying. There's never been an election quite like this. And I know every cycle we say, well, this is the most important election in our lifetime. And to a certain degree, that's always going to be the way that it is, because you stand at a crossroads in which direction is your culture going to go. And you fight for that particular election. But I will certainly say, I think without equivocation, without hesitation or fear of contradiction, that this is the craziest election cycle that I've seen, at least here in the state of Indiana, with all those things that you're mentioning. The turnover at the governor's race. Who would have thought that Mike Pence would have been on a short list for Donald Trump, no less be chosen by Donald Trump? I know I wasn't even looking in that direction, especially when he had endorsed just weeks before a different candidate.
Right.
And now you see all that Mike Pence, I believe, is doing to help the Trump ticket. And so I didn't see that coming. And then that clears open the spot. And I didn't know that it was going to be the lieutenant governor that got that position. And now he's there. And then Todd Young wins the Republican nomination. And the Democrats realize they're not going to win with Barron Hill. And so they talk Evan Bayh into it. And then you see Republicans trying to lure Mitch Daniels back into the... It's just been crazy every day. It seems like another storyline. But again, I again believe that for those of us committed to the war for truth, our focus has to remain constant and consistent and uncompromising when it comes to those things.
Well,
our vote is for these principles.
Indeed. And let's not lose sight of the fact that God's on the throne and he's not nervous.
Right.
The outcome may not fall in line with what we think should happen, but the Lord works in all kinds of ways. He's not forgotten us. He has a plan. Our fight may look entirely different after the election. We may fight in different ways, but we will continue to be faithful in the fight and continue regardless of the outcome. I hold you in very high regard, Peter, as a commentator and as a man of integrity. With the rise of social media and everyone weighing in, let's take a couple minutes to hear from you about the importance of civility in what we post, what we say. I have seen Christians go after Christians in the most vile way. Please give us a few minutes of commentary, wisdom on how we should interact with one another as people who call ourselves Christians.
It certainly is a temptation. There's so many benefits to social media. There's a great way to communicate ideas, to share thoughts and perspectives that otherwise might have been buried. I can have somebody that I follow that posts a link to a blog post of somebody that they know that I would have never had any reason to read what they say, and God speaking through that individual. So there are so many benefits, but as with anything, when it comes to the elements of free speech, there are going to be those that abuse that. And I feel very strongly that as Christians, as those called by the name of Christ, that we have a duty to speak truth. And let's be honest, there are effective tools for speaking truth. And sometimes that is the use of sarcasm. Sometimes that is the use of, what did Frederick Douglass call it, biting condescension at some point in time. But we always have to remember, and this is what I try to stress to myself, when I used to do the radio program here in Kokomo, I had a little plaque that I put in front of me, and it had one word on it, and the word was captives. And the reason was I wanted to always remember that I was at war, as the Apostle Paul says, with the false notions that set themselves up against the knowledge of God, and that the people that I was talking to, those were not my enemies. The enemy is Satan, and Satan has taken captive through false ideas and false beliefs a great number of people. And so my job isn't to berate or to destroy or to obliterate or humiliate another individual, a captive. My job is to liberate them. And I can't do that if I'm attacking them personally. I do that through, attacking bad ideas and pointing out how foolish a life lived in rebellion to God is. But there's always that temptation, and it's very easy, especially for those of us that, I've joked that I've been given the spiritual gift of ticking people off, but it's always a temptation when you join into these battles to slip into that mode of that person is my enemy. No, that person is not your enemy. Satan is your enemy, and that person is a captive, and you need to be speaking truth, speak it directly, speak it firmly, but with the ultimate objective of liberating that person and bringing them to an understanding, a fuller understanding of God's will and what he intends here on earth.
Thank you so much, Peter Heck, for joining us today. And thank you for joining us on August 29th here in Northeast Indiana on the grounds of the beautiful Joseph Dequeue Farm when we celebrate the Harvest Celebration for Life, joined by honorary host Pat and Kim Miller and friends Congressman Marlin and Christy Stutzman, Lieutenant Governor Eric Holcomb, and a whole host of elected officials and pro-life advocates and supporters. We hope you'll join us. Go to iChooseLife.org to register. Peter, looking forward to seeing you on the 29th, and God bless you, friend, for speaking the truth in love, seasoned with salt, as always. God bless you, friend.
Thank you, Kathy, so much. We'll see you soon.
Welcome to I Choose Life News and Views. This is Abigail Eschelbach. Thanks so much for joining us today. Always love having you tune in. Hopefully these interviews are interesting and educational, and we're talking about stuff you want to hear about. If you have any suggestions for us, feel free to email us. iChooseLife.org has our contact information. We love to hear from you. The field of bioethics is an intrinsic part of the pro-life movement, and yet we don't pay it a lot of attention. I spent some time earlier this summer reading an excellent book called Culture of Death, The Age of Do Harm Medicine, written by Wesley J. Smith. And I had no idea how little I knew of what was actually going on in the hospitals in my own country. Every once in a while, we hear a horror story from the Netherlands or somewhere like that, and we think, oh, thank God it's not happening here. Well, some of that stuff has been happening here, and for quite some time, we just don't know about it and we're not hearing about it. And it's high time that we inform ourselves about what is going on. This book, Culture of Death, was exactly what I needed to be able to understand today's bioethics climate. Everything is well organized, clearly defined, simply explained, and demonstrated with cases and examples. And the author, Mr. Wesley J. Smith, is here today joining us. Hi, Wesley.
Hi, Abigail. Thank you very much for that very kind introduction.
Oh, well, we are so happy to have you. Just to fill the listeners in a little bit more on the book and about who you are and why I'm so happy to have you. The first edition of this book was written in 2000, and then you've just recently published the second edition of it. And you are a senior fellow at the Discovery Institute's Center on Human Exceptionalism, which I think is fantastic. But you also work as a consultant to the Patients' Rights Council. Can you tell us just a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, the Patients' Rights Council used to be called the International Anti-Euthanasia Task Force. It was formed by Rita Marker, who is a tremendous advocate against euthanasia and assisted suicide. It's a nonprofit educational organization. And actually, it was Rita Marker and her book, Deadly Compassion, which was written in the late 80s about the goals of the international euthanasia movement, that so shocked me and stunned me that people would actually be advocating such ideas, that drew me into these issues, starting with assisted suicide and then moving to the more general field of bioethics from there. And what's really depressing is that the things that Rita wrote about as a warning in the late 80s, and in which the first version of Culture of Death, which at that time was subtitled The Assault on Medical Ethics in America, was also a warning of what was coming in 2001, is now here. And that's why we changed the title of the updated version to The Age of Do Harm Medicine. And when you think about the differences between 2001 and 2016, when the book came out, in 2001, the Terri Schiavo case had not occurred. There were only two places in the world with legalized, formally legalized assisted suicide or euthanasia. That was the state of Oregon and Switzerland. And since then, euthanasia has spread like a stain with tremendous horrors occurring. In fact, my first euthanasia, anti-euthanasia piece appeared in Newsweek on June 28, 1993. And that's how Rita Marker learned about me. And I wrote that because a friend of mine had committed suicide under the influence of Hemlock Society literature. Mm-hmm. Hemlock Society was the foremost euthanasia advocacy group at the time. It still is, only they've changed their name now to euphemistically call themselves Compassion and Choices, and they push the death agenda to the tune of millions of dollars every year from the George Soros Foundation, to show you where that field is coming from. And I wrote a book called an article called The Whispers of Strangers, and people can find it online if they're interested. Just go Wesley J. Smith, Whispers of Strangers on Google. It'll pop up.
Okay, great.
And one of the things I predicted this was my first exposure to this issue. I worried in 1993 that eventually euthanasia and assisted suicide would be conjoined with organ harvesting. I put it as a plum to society, to give society a stake in the death agenda. And that is actually now happening in Belgium and in the Netherlands. That's do harm medicine. We dehydrate very cognitively disabled people to death in all 50 states in this country, not because they're dying, but because we believe the quality of their life is insufficient, like what happened to Terry Schiavo. That's do harm medicine. There are actually policies in place in hospitals around the country, and it's particularly the law of Texas, that if a patient wants life-sustaining treatment, remember, wants life-sustaining treatment, but the doctors and the bioethics committee of the hospital don't think that the quality of life of the patient justifies the care or the money, they can unilaterally stop treatment that is wanted, that sustains life, that is stopped not because it isn't working, but because it is working.
Mm-hmm.
That's called medical futility or futile care. That's do harm medicine. And so the book seeks to help people understand what is happening, warn of what could happen, not what will happen. I want to make that very clear. What could happen if, let's say, grandma goes into a hospital with a stroke and will be impaired, there may be a push to say, don't give her treatment, even though grandma may have said, I want treatment in an advance directive. So I'm forewarned is forearmed. Canada, the Supreme Court recently imposed a nationwide right to euthanasia on the whole country, and now Christian pro-life doctors are being told in Quebec, as one example, they have to participate in euthanasia, either by doing the deed or referring to somebody they know will do the deed, which means every doctor may have to be complicit in euthanasia in Canada in the near future. That's do harm medicine. So there's a lot that people need to be aware of, and which often doesn't get covered in the mainstream media. And when it does, it's always boosting things such as assisted suicide.
Right. Yeah. So let's dig in a little deeper to a couple of these things. I know there were some things in your book. Well, there are a lot of things in your book that I didn't really know existed. I wasn't really aware of. So I'd like to catch a couple of those for our listeners. The first thing that sort of slapped me in the face was something that you called the hierarchy of human worth.
Right. The foundation of Western civilization and the ideal to which we have been struggling for hundreds of years is that each and every human being has equal moral worth, that we don't judge some human beings as having greater value than other human beings. And every time we have fallen off that ideal, we have ended up with oppression, tyranny, and killing. Just one quick example, the eugenics movement.
Mm-hmm.
In the eugenics movement, which Margaret Sanger was a huge supporter of, and many of the progressive elites back in the early 20th century and into the first third and even to the half of the 20th century, eugenics distinguished between the so-called fit and the so-called unfit, stating that the unfit had lesser value than the fit, and then presumed the right to prevent the so-called unfit from reproducing. And so there was involuntary sterilization.
Right.
In the United States, 60 to 70,000 people involuntarily sterilized. A Supreme Court decision, Buck v. Bell in 1927, as odious as the Dred Scott decision about slavery, ruled that in 8-1 that a woman named Virginia Buck, who had done nothing wrong except be raped, and that isn't wrong on her part, by a foster family member and then impregnated, she was put into a mental hospital by the foster family, and the eugenicist said, oh, she was the daughter of a prostitute and she's given birth out of wedlock. We should involuntarily sterilize her. And the court permitted it under color of law. And it just opened up all kinds of terrors. The law that Germany put in, the Nuremberg Laws of 1934, to permit, quote, racial hygiene and so forth, the same kind of thing, was patterned after the law in California that permitted involuntary sterilization.
Mm.
So when we say that some human lives have greater value than other human lives, the outcome is for those deemed by the power elite to have lesser value, they get oppressed. It's authoritarian. They get killed. Here now in bioethics, which is a contraction for biomedical ethics, you have many of the most prominent bioethicists, not all, but many, particularly those that don't have a modifier such as conservative or Catholic in front of the term,
mm-hmm.
bioethicist, saying that being human is a moral irrelevancy, that what matters isn't being human, but what matters are having sufficient capacities, such as, say, being self-aware over time or the mental ability to value your own life, to be what they call a person. Now, most of your listeners would say, well, a human being and a person, that would be synonym. Not to the mainstream view in bioethics. So in bioethics, there is such a thing as the so-called human non-person.
Wow.
Such as all unborn infants,
mm-hmm.
all unborn babies, embryos, fetuses, are not persons under this view because they're not conscious, they're not self-aware. But that also means newborn babies are not persons under this view, and therefore there is a very toxic strain that is not unanimous, but many in bioethics, some of the most prominent voices, such as Peter Singer of Princeton University, support infanticide, because not because the examples Singer often gives are, well, if it's a baby is disabled, the parent should be able to kill the disabled baby because it will cause less suffering in the world. But that isn't the reason. The reason he thinks babies can be killed is because they are supposedly not persons. And then people like Terry Schiavo would be deemed not to be a person because she'd lost those capacities that she'd once possessed. I once, during the Terry Schiavo imbroglio, I had a debate with a Florida bioethicist named Bill Allen on Court TV, and it was an online debate, and I said, let's, you know, everybody knew the facts. Let's cut to the chase. Is Terry Schiavo a person? He said, no, she's not. I then said, well, does that mean we can take her organs instead of just dehydrate her to death? And he said, yes, they should be treated like any piece of property.
Wow.
Those people who are deemed non-persons in bioethics by the mainstream view, now this is not happening, but it's being advocated at the highest places, and this is how eugenics came into being. It was imposed from the top down. It didn't bubble from the bottom up, right? It wasn't grassroots.
Right.
So many in bioethics are saying that people like Terry Schiavo should be able to be live harvested for her organs, a form of euthanasia by organ harvesting. They say that people like Terry Schiavo should be able to be experimented upon as if she were a lab rat because she's supposedly not a person. At the same time, some of these bioethicists also say that some animals are persons. For example, dogs and whales and pigs. And many will say that if an animal has a greater cognitive capacity than a human being, that animal has greater moral worth. And so you begin to see the consequences of giving up on human exceptionalism, of rejecting the inherent objective moral equality of all humans without having to take measurements. Just because they're human, it ends up in oppression and exploitation, which is now being advocated in very high places. And it's a very frightening thing. And the more we bring it into the public light, the less likely it is to happen, because light is the great filter, the great sanitizer that keeps very toxic, very noxious policies from going into effect.
That's all the time we have today. Tune in next week to hear the conclusion to the conversation between Abigail Eschelbach and Wesley J. Smith.
The 5th Annual Links for Life Golf Outing is September 19th at Coyote Creek Golf Course. Allen County Right to Life has sponsorship levels starting at $100 for you and your business. Team sponsorships include a goodie bag, beverages on the course, a 19th hole sponsored by Chops Steak and Seafood, dinner at the lodge, and prizes. Join us on the green Monday, September 19th to save lives and enjoy a beautiful day of golf. Details and registration at iChooseLife.org or on Facebook at Links for Life.
You've been listening to I Choose Life News and Views. If you have questions about this program or if you'd like to support the fight for life, please call 260-471-1849 or go to iChooseLife.org, because without the right to life, no other rights matter.